Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Project Love podcast. It's Vicky here, the love coach of the Project Love duo, and I have a gorgeous podcast to share with you today. In episodes like this, when I'm flying solo, you'll hear me having conversations about love and dating and what it takes to cultivate a happy and healthy relationship. There is nothing I love more than having deep and meaningful conversations with people on these topics and having people come onto the podcast and share their love stories. At Project Love, we believe in celebrating the real, warts and all love stories, the ones that tell a story of someone's relationship journey, where you don't just hear how people met, you hear about what it takes to sustain love, how people work through challenges and setbacks in their relationships, the ups and the downs and the lessons learned along the way. It is these real love stories that we love to share and celebrate, and the vulnerability and courage that it takes to tell them. And I'm so excited to share one of those stories with you today. Today's episode is a real love story interview with a very, very special person and dear, dear friend, Bexy Cameron, and the person who was instrumental in the creation of Project Love. And she's the person who introduced Selena and I all those years ago. She was our matchmaker. In this episode, Bexy reflects on her love story with her partner, Paz. A story which spans 12 years and one that is filled with so many wise lessons and gifts and so much beauty and courage, forgiveness and bravery and the purest of loves. I can't wait for you to listen to it. And before you do, I just wanted to let you know that this week I've opened up the doors to new love coaching clients and I have a handful of spots for you to work with me one-on-one over the next few months. It would be such an honour to work with you one-on-one if you're feeling the call and you're wanting to make 2020 the year that you get ready for love and create the kind of relationship that you dream of. A handful of spaces onto the Get Ready for Love coaching programme have just opened up. If you'd love to take one of those places and join me on the journey of transformation, then I would love to hear from you. Simply head on over to loveprojectlove.com/lovecoaching for all of the details and how to get in touch to arrange your discovery call. And I'll also add the link to the show notes. And so, without further ado, here is the gorgeous podcast episode with Bexy. I hope you enjoy it. Bexy, thank you so much for being our guest on the podcast today. It's such an honour to have you and to hear your beautiful love story.
Thanks for having me.
So where would you like to begin? Where would you like to start your story?
So this love story is, it covers about a time period of about 12 years. It has breaks. It has multiple heartbreaks. It has joy. It has toxicity on many areas. It has explosions of emotion. And I would say definitely has been a revealing of parts of myself that I am, you know, not proud of, and also that potentially you wouldn't want the world to see. So good job I'm doing a podcast about it. This should be more called something like the confessions session rather than the love story. But, you know, let's crack on. 12 years ago, I met Paz, my partner, in the toilets of a rave on Valentine's Day, in the men's toilets. I met him in there, and the rave was called We Hate Love. And the two of us were there because we were single and because I really hated the institution of Valentine's and the commercialization of love. And the tagline was something like, stick two fingers up to love. So kind of the opposite of what you do. But, you know, young and foolish. I met Paz in the toilets there. That was our first encounter. And then it was like, I had quite an interesting conversation with him. It was a good connection. We were both being naughty, as you can imagine. And then we just left and I didn't see him again for the rest of the night. Cut to about 2 weeks later, I'm in another bar and he walks in. And from how he tells this, he said he saw me standing at the bar, remembered me from our toilet session, and he knew that I was the one for him. As in, that was the minute that he absolutely knew that I was the one. Whether you believe in the one or not, that was the feeling that he got. And we had our first date at the Kerrang Awards a week or so later. And it was hilarious. It was foolish. It was, you know, drunken. And we had this kiss at the awards, like our first kiss. If I was going to describe it in a way, like a visual kind of scene from a film, it would have been one of those ones where it's like a hyperlapse where everything is going on around you and you're just in this moment in the middle of it. And it's almost like nothing else matters and the world is going past and you just don't care. And weirdly, when I spoke to Paz about this earlier this year, like, do you remember our first kiss? He described it in exactly that same way, which is kind of, I mean, it's kind of cool. It just made me feel like we just had this incredible connection. Anyway, we were young and we were very silly. I mean, as in, like, we were all over the shop at the time. I had a job that I loved. Paz and I started doing some work together, and we never really kind of became like boyfriend and girlfriend. We just were this couple of people that every time we saw each other, the electricity just went through the roof. It was like, you know, snogging everywhere and running around and like getting off our faces together and, you know, just all of that stuff that you do. And the reason why we weren't really a couple is doesn't put me in a very good light. Essentially, at the time, I had just started dating someone else, which is where the story becomes more complex and also slightly dark. So if I'm going to go into like the reasoning that I, you know, can retrospectively, I can look back and I can understand what was going on. Whereas at the time, I had no idea what I was doing and why I was behaving in such damaging and sabotaging ways. I essentially was, you know, in my mid-20s and I was pretty wild at the time. And I also had so much stuff that I hadn't dealt with from how I grew up. I hadn't dealt with, various forms of abuse that I'd suffered. I hadn't dealt with being given really toxic versions of what sex was looked like. And I was given really toxic patterns of what relationships looked like. You know, my father was a massive adulterer. My mother was really passive. My dad was really wild and violent and all of these things that I had never dealt with at all. And so I get to my mid-20s and I'm this kind of wild girl. Wild girl is such a kind of overused cliche to say. What I'm trying to say is I would work like maybe 60 hours a week and I would party every night. I had not dealt with so much stuff. And then I'm in my 20s and I'm burning the candle at both ends. And I have got this shame attached to me from childhood that I feel like the person I'm supposed to be with is somebody that is normal and a good person. And that is like, is somebody that I can attach myself to that makes me clean. Does that make sense? That as in like, I felt quite unworthy. I felt quite dirty as a human. I had this underlying feeling that I was a bad person. And I really thought that what I needed to do was set the balance right by being with somebody who was a good, clean, kind person. And that was this person that I started to date. You know, let's call him
Roger.
Let's call him Roger. Apologies to any Rogers out there for laughing at your name, but just the idea of me dating a Roger is pretty brilliant. Anyway, so I meet Roger and I think that he's going to balance me out in some way. And what I'm not actually thinking about when I'm with Roger is the fact that, you know, that he's completely not the type of person that I should be with. He was a really great friend of mine and we made fantastic friends, but we should have never, ever, ever been a couple. But I'm subconsciously thinking that he makes me good. So guess what I start doing? I start cheating on him with Paz. But if I really was going to be cold about it, and Roger, if you're listening, I am deeply sorry. It was like, although Roger was my boyfriend, I was cheating on Paz with him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because Paz was this person that I had this incredible connection with. He was the person that would, like, and I hate using the word butterflies because I think it's a bit of a crappy explanation for how you feel when you're excited, you know, about somebody. But I would get so excited, and it was like we were, you could describe it as like kindling, or you could describe it as two moronic toddlers that are seeing each other for the first time in a day and just go batshit bonkers bananas when they see each other. It was that. But I equated him with toxicity because we were doing all this stuff in the music industry together at the time. We were going out and getting, you know, wasted together all the time, and we'd end up at squat parties and we would do this and that and the other. I thought to myself, Paz is me. Paz isn't the person that I should be with. Paz is the person that, of course, I want to be with, but I shouldn't be with him because guess what? Paz equals danger. And that's what my brain was telling me. Paz equals danger. Roger equals safety. But I couldn't let go of Paz because it was just, there's no two ways about it. I had fallen in love with him, but I was not allowing myself to go there because I thought, do you know what's going to happen if the two of us actually are a couple? It will explode. At the time, we were both working in the music industry, and we were doing like 13 festivals on the trot together. And it was literally like that kind of lifestyle. And you know what I mean? It was like, it was exciting. It was brilliant. But also I was like, this feeds this dark part of me. And I never really thought about the fact that if I actually gave it a proper wholesome chance outside of like our industry or how I was viewing everything at that time, that maybe it would have actually had the chance to be a nourishing and good experience. So it ended horribly. It ended with everyone being heartbroken. Roger was heartbroken. I was heartbroken. Paz was heartbroken. So the explosion that I thought was coming, it was coming, but it was one of my own making. And I really feel like, you know, it's easy to look back on it now and kind of like retrofit it into like lessons and stuff. But at the time, if I really get back into my brain as like a 25-year-old, I was a mess. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where to put my feelings. And I think I got a real buzz at some point of being duplicitous. Like, you know, and that sounds grotty. It is grotty. But like, I got a buzz off the fact that I was keeping secrets and that I had this double life going. And, you know, the more I've read about it now, in my 30s, the more I realize that, you know, that in some ways there is nothing that can make you feel as alive as having an affair, because so much in you is going off. Everything's popping. Like, it's dangerous. It's illicit. It's secret, but it's also loving. And it's also, you know, it makes you feel, it's toxic, but it makes you feel alive. And I hate, like, now, you know, obviously when it exploded and I saw the damage that I'd done to everyone, including, I lost friends over this as well. Like, it wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't just like Paz was hurt from it, and it wasn't just like Roger was hurt from it. I had people who didn't talk to me ever again after that, or this all went down. So it was a mess. So luckily for me, after about a year or maybe 2 years of this explosion, Paz and I became friends, which I will forever be grateful to him for that, because I don't know if I could have done that. You know, if I was that brokenhearted by somebody, you know, if I'd really been in love with someone and then I was that brokenhearted, to become friends with them is a really tough, tough tough ask. And also, luckily for me, Roger and I became friends and are still friends to this very day. So, you know, from that perspective, those things started to rectify themselves. And guess what? I went and I did a hell of a lot of work on myself, not just related to this, but related to a bunch of other stuff. But this type of behavior, this duplicity, was at the heart of why I went and did a bunch of work on myself. Went and did therapy, went and did the Hoffman process, went and did the bridge, did a whole ton of stuff going, what is it that's at the core of me that's making me behave in these abhorrent ways? Because it turns out I am a good person. I'm a great person. I've got a lot of love to give. And I just didn't know how. I just didn't know how. I didn't know what the good models of love even looked like at that point. So I had to learn all of that. And that is, you know, it takes humility to get to a point where you go, I don't know fucking anything about love or how to behave. And we think that it's all going to happen naturally for us. And then guess what? You end up dating your dad or being your dad. And that was my problem. I was acting like my father in that relationship. And then just to get a right kick in the chuff, I spent the next two relationships acting like my mother and dating my father. So, you know, I've gone through the real ringer when it comes to like copying parental patterns. You know, rid yourself of one and then take on the other. Where was I? We all became friends. And then Paz became this very, really important person in my life. And I say that, you know, he started helping me in all kinds of ways. He's a producer. I was making films. He would always be there on the end of the phone. We'd go out. We would meet for coffee. And, you know, he just became this really, like, really important, solid friend of mine. And, you know, even to the nitty gritty, like not worst bits of it, but we were that good friends that he used to like send me pictures of all the girls that he was like sleeping with and like going on dates with and talk through his experiences in like great detail, which now that we're a couple is fantastic to have that. Fantastic to have that information. All of that information from all of those. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, it's a lot. Anyway,
we've now been joined by Nacho, Bex's dog, who wants to be, he's been dying to be a part of the recording. He's been having his, pressing his nose up against the glass, wanting to come in. So if you hear any noises, it's probably Nacho.
Any heavy breathing, don't blame on us. It's not that kind of podcast. Essentially, Paz and I had become really good friends, and he'd been instrumental in helping me out on a bunch of different projects. And one of them, we had a little wrap party at my house, and I invited him over. And interestingly enough, actually, I'll rewind to the week before. Paz and I went for cocktails together as mates, and we sat in this. Bar, and Paz just went, cards on the table. Why, you know, we've been friends for 10 years by this point. Why wouldn't you and I give it a go? What's stopping us from giving this a go? Like, we clearly like being around each other. You know, we're clearly, you know, and he wasn't saying this, but we clearly were still attracted to each other. And there was still massive, we were magnetized to each other. Why wouldn't we give this another go? And I was like, you know what? I'll tell you why. Because you're too fucking mental. But Paz is quite an extrovert. He's, you know, a big, big character. He's done a lot of crazy things in his time. And I think that because, you know, we'd dated 10 years before, what I saw him as was this over the top, ridiculous, wild man. And I was just like, you know, you're just too crazy for me. You're too mental. That's why I wouldn't date you. And he went, well, I would never date you because I could never trust you. And I was like, oh, touche. Like, fair enough. Then we just went on to have a really lovely night. Fast forward to him coming to my house a week later for this wrap party that I'm put on. And he ends up being the last person at my house. And one thing leads to another, and we start to kiss, and then it's really lovely, and then I kind of pull away from him, and I'm just kind of looking at him, and when I'm looking at him, it's almost like this cloud has been lifted, or my vision has become clear for like the first time, and I realize that this entity that I thought was mental, this person that I just told a week ago I would never be with because he's too crazy, I realized that this narrative I had of him was 10 years old. Mm. I realized that I was looking at him through glasses a decade old.
Yeah.
And I also realized, you know, and one of the things that made me realize that as well was the fact that the way that he'd said to me, well, I could never trust you, it kind of hurt me when he said that, because I thought, well, you know, I am trustworthy now, but I definitely wasn't then. So his version of me.
He had an old narrative
of me as well. But it was just like, bam, in an instant, I was looking at him and I was like, oh my God, where about, you know, a 5 minutes ago, I would have seen danger. And I don't know, where I would have seen like just a toxic situation. Now I was looking at him and I was like, I can see safety. I can see nurture. You know, I can see this being something that, like, I can see having. It's almost like, you know, like it's almost like a flash forward that I could that I had. Yeah. A flash forward of seeing us actually having a really nourishing and safe life together. And it just happened in an instant. And as I was thinking that, he turned around and he looked at me and he went, Bex, you know, if you want to give this another go, I'm up for it. And I was like, what? And it was so mental, because we literally, within the space of an hour, had gone from two mates to all of a sudden, it's almost like we'd fast forwarded into how we just let ourselves go and fast forwarded into a relationship where we both told each other that we loved each other within the first hour of being in a relationship, because we know each other so well and we've always had that connection. And now that we were actually both just going, do you know what? Fuck it. Let's allow it. Yeah. Let's allow ourselves the gift of, you know, being humble, the gift of being brave and trying this again. Which was, yeah, pretty nuts thing to do. And then I had, you know, the next morning I had to go see my granddad. He took me to the train station, and it was my first big test on whether or not I was going to be like above board and open about the fact that I was seeing Paz, because my two sisters were going to be at the train station. And I was like, no, this is right. This is what I, you know, this is what I need to do. This is my test. He walked me into the train station and was like, take care of her, da 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 da. And like my two sisters were looking at me with these smiles. And I was like, I had this worry about people knowing about us, because obviously what happened before was such a mess that I just was like really worried about people knowing. And I was like, no, if I'm into this, people need to know and I need to be unafraid. Anyway, that's kind of how we got together the proper time. And then it just became exactly what I thought it would never be. It was almost like the opposite of, you know, when you hear the stories, you meet somebody and you fall in love with them and you have all these brilliant ideas about how things are going to pan out. And, you know, some people plan all these, this is how it's going to be. And they make a vision of what this person's like. It's like I had the opposite experience of that. I created a version of him that was dark and it was toxic and it was mental. And what actually happened was the polar opposite of that. I've never been with somebody more generous with their time, more generous physically with everything. He's such a carer, yeah. Such a lover, and he's hilarious. And which I already, that was the bit that I knew, but just there are no bounds to his generosity, which is incredible. And also just he's really safe.
Yes. You know, and it's funny because you had introduced me to him. We'd bumped into him years ago. It must be about 5 years ago. And you said, oh, this is my friend Paz. I don't think you had seen him for a while at that point. And I gave him a hug. And I remember saying that to you. I said, oh, I got such a loving, caring energy from him. And I'd only sort of spent 2 minutes with him. And I remember sharing that with you and just felt like I just sort of got this sort of, you know, impression of him in those few minutes. And that really comes across, like that safety and his kindness.
You know, he's safe and he's sorted and he's ambitious and he's caring and he's all those other things that I wasn't allowing myself to see. And then, you know, when I saw him for who he really is, that's when everything just really clicked into place. And that's when, you know, I couldn't unsee it in a way. It's like, you know, it's amazing. And I suppose what I feel is a massive sense of gratitude for the fact that people can give out second chances, you know. And, you know, I think that when I was younger, I was so black and white about stuff. If so-and-so does X to you, then you should never do this, and la 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 la, and they cross the line, and all this kind of stuff. And then I've been given a second chance, you know. And that is such a gift for somebody to trust, you know, to trust me again, and you know, in a way, it's almost like I had 10 years of having to go around the houses, and in between our two relationships, I had 10 years of pretty hardcore stuff going, like hardcore lessons in relationships going on. And it's almost like we got together when, like, I was actually ready to be loved.
Yes.
And I know I had this conversation with you before, because obviously I had been doing my hello goodbye for something in the region of like 8 years. And I think I said to you, it was about a month before Paz and I got together, I said to you how weird I thought it was that on my dream section, I would put stuff like, I win an Oscar or whatever else I put on that year. And I'd never once done anything to do with love. I'd never allowed myself to dream that I would find a good partner. I never thought that that was, do you know why? I was embarrassed. I thought that that would be such a sad, loserish thing to do, to write in your book that you wanted to find love. I mean, like, what is that all about? Yeah, you know, these things don't happen by accident. And the whole point of the hello goodbye stuff is that you're making space for something that you want. And I just wasn't. Yeah, it's just allowing yourself the space to actually accept the good thing when it's in front of you. I think sometimes seeking out toxic relationships has been my MO. It's really weird, actually, because, you know, Paz is the one that I thought that I saw as this toxic guy, and then ended up actually dating people that were extraordinarily toxic. I had really toxic relationships with, and I didn't see it. You know, people that seemed like they were completely like normal on the surface, and then end up having like these toxic relationships with. And yet Paz was the one that I was like, that guy's crazy. And do you know, it's quite crazy to me. It's quite nuts to think that that's how it kind of ended up. But yeah, I think that I probably had Paz in my life for 10 years. You know, I'm not saying that he was sitting on the sidelines waiting for me by any stretch of the imagination, because, you know, he was a very busy boy when it comes to the dating scene. But, you know, I clearly wasn't ready to let somebody in that was actually going to love me in a way that was healthy. I was still replaying all that old bullshit, and I was still learning lessons over and over again. God, I know we're supposed to look back at these things and be like, oh, it all works out for, you know, the best. And when I think about how many times I had to learn the same arduous lessons in relationships, and retrospectively, it is so frustrating to look back at how many times you have to learn the same lesson. How many times did you have to go through unrequited love? How many times do you have to try and fix people in relationships to realize that you're using it as a way to not look at yourself? You know,
that was my
that's my MO. And how many times do you have to try, you know, be this carer without realizing that actually the dark side of care is control. And what are you trying to do to control these people? Mm-hmm. It's baffling to me that it took a total of, in my two relationships before Paz, 7 years of essentially the same lessons on loop. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. I picked up a journal by accident from 3 years before, opened it up onto a page and realized that it was exactly the same page, essentially, mm-hmm. as the one I had just written. Mm-hmm. That the things I was thinking and feeling and what I was going through hadn't actually changed. And that was from 3 years ago. And that gave me such a fright. Because, I was like, what? What? How this could have been today? I mean, from the first time round, I'd say my lesson that I hope that I learned was that the duplicity that I was existing with, that was so dangerous. The reason that I had it was because it made me feel safe. Now, I know that sounds quite contradictory, but truth is that if I am with two people, I'm never actually with either of them. And that is a safety net for my heart. I'm never giving myself to anybody, because the reality is, doing that requires vulnerability. And that's something that I was not willing to be vulnerable in a relationship. And so I thought that was keeping me safe. And that was to the detriment of, everyone, everyone's lives at the time. I suppose what I've learned this time around with Paz is to allow it when you see it, and to be brave and to stop caring so much about what other people think. I think that was a really big thing for me. What will people think if I'm back with Paz? It's not important. I mean, it's important if they're your close friends and they think that you're in danger, clearly. That stuff's important. But really, if it's just stuff to do with your ego, I think I was so wrapped up in ego when I was young, and my ideas of who I was going to be with was a lot to do with that, rather than how would they make me feel on a daily basis? Would I enjoy waking up with that person? Yeah. How would it be when we were in the supermarket rowing over cheese? All of the things that are the tapestry of your relationship. I was thinking, how will this person reflect on me and my ego? That was like almost the litmus test of, or my kind of way of choosing a partner. Like, I went around the time I first met Paz, I had this, because I was in the music industry at the time, I was thinking that I was going to end up with someone from a band. I mean, obviously, if you're dating someone in a band, I apologize, but that was my that's kind of where I thought. And then that was nothing to do with like what the process of a relationship is actually about, the nuts and bolts of it, and the thing that makes them deeply wicked is nothing to do with what that person actually does, or their that standpoint. So I think that being able to release a bit of the ego and actually be like, what would the day to day be like with this person was a really important thing for me. And like, mine and Paz's day to day is just so brilliant. I've never woken up with him without him being, smiling or being hilarious or being positive or being grateful that he's even in the same room as me. We have this existence where everything is a laugh. It's like being, sounds really cheesy, but it's like we are like two schoolboys who are playing truant constantly with frogs in our pockets and catapults, and we're just running around having this like brilliant time, and we can't believe our luck. We absolutely can't believe our luck. I'm baffled on a daily basis that I'm in a relationship that is this positive, that is this nourishing and nurturing and caring. And I'm not saying that we don't have our issues or we don't have our little rows or whatever. Some of the things that you think about, I think potentially when you're young, is you think about relationships in things that aren't really about what a relationship is about. The relationship is the day to day. It's the waking up together. It's how do you handle rows? It's how do you learn to communicate? What are your strategies for coexisting with another human being in ways that, can maybe prevent irritation, or, it's stuff like that. How do you be consistent? None of this stuff I'm talking about is sexy. It's not sexy. We think about the dinners out, and we think about the shagging, and we think about the going to the Eiffel Tower. Not a euphemism. I mean, going to Paris. And And you know, that's, you know, that those are the images and the stories that we've been sold since we were born, in every film and every book that we've, you know, ever watched or seen or heard of, is that, that's what a relationship is. And it's not. It's how do you have your every single day, the boring moments plus the big dreams, you know, the mediocre times, the car drives, how do you have all of those things and do it with another person in a way that makes your life the most loving and interesting and sometimes boring and consistent possible?
Yeah. Yeah, it is those mundane moments that are missed out of the fairy tale stories and the rom-com stories and all of those stories, like you say, that we've been brought up on. Those mundane moments, like, as you say, fighting over cheese in the supermarket, they are missed out of the sort of big love stories. And that's why these podcasts are so important at shining a light on the real warts and all stories and what they entail, and a realistic portrayal of a healthy, secure relationship.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and if we're learning from a few places, from films and books, and then the other places we're learning is from mum and dad, if you have one of both or neither, like that's where we're getting these messages from. And if we go into this world with the assumption that love comes naturally, sure, I mean, love comes naturally, but being in a relationship doesn't.
No.
I mean, it's all about strategies and communication and figuring out how to be inside of, you know, especially if you live in London, a box with another person with as few irritations and rubs as possible and with as least friction as possible. I remember when, I think one of the nice things as well for me about coming into this relationship with Paz at, you know, a bit of an older age, or not an older age, we're in our prime, clearly. But, you know, coming into this relationship in our 30s, one of the things that's great about it is, like, when I've got a good thing now, I know it's a good thing. You know, I'm grateful, because when you've had enough, you know, stinkers, or when you've, like, when you've, you know, if you get into something like this at this age, you are going to appreciate it. Well, you should appreciate it, because we know that life doesn't offer us opportunities like this every single day. And when they turn up and they're given to you, it is exactly that, a gift. Mm. So it's trying to remember that this is a gift, to be able to be in this space with another human being, and for them to love you. And, like, maybe these things don't last forever, but I don't think that necessarily putting a time period or a time stamp on anything is a measurement of whether it's successful or not anyway. So did you love it? Did you enjoy it? Otherwise, the only successful relationship you'll ever be in your entire life is the person that you die with. And that's just not how things work. So yeah, I think it's good for me to know that this has come back round and come at a time where I am bloody grateful for it. So, you know, that's good. And I think another thing about it that is quite interesting for the pair of us is, because of the fact that, you know, we are where we are, you know, maturity level wise, which is deeply immature but also quite mature. We kind of, first week of moving in together, this is going to sound really like crap, but we wrote a list of house rules, which are basically things that we try to live by. And, you know, it's stupid stuff. Like, you know, obviously rule number one is there are no rules, clearly. But, you know, rule number three is sing always. And, you know, that's the frequency that we both like to be at. Is like, if someone's doing something, the other one will start to write a song about it. And that's kind of our, do you know what I mean? And it'll literally be like, did you take Nacho for a poo? Did you? And it'll all, you know, everything is,
Nacho's,
yeah, it's, that's our frequency. And then, you know, rule number five, for example, is don't throw each other under the bus. Rule number seven is, it's never about the toilet seat. You know, that classic saying of, like, if you're having an argument about the toilet seat being up or down, it's not about that. And it's these are the things, I know it sounds really silly, but we sat down and we went, what are some of the things that we need to remind ourselves? We're going into this relationship and we know we love each other, but that's not enough. So how do we give ourselves, even if it's stupid strategies, silly strategies, what do we do to sustain this thing, which we know is beautiful, to stop it from becoming, you know, that toxic or mundane? You know, when you see you know, and everyone's obviously going through their own stuff, but when you see a couple in the supermarket and they've obviously gotten to that level of contempt for each other, that they talk to each other with this, with like pure contempt, mm-hmm. and the things that they say to each other and the tone of their voice, and you're baffled by it because you're like, how could you speak to another human being in this manner? How did this insidious rot take hold of your relationship and, you know, turn you into this? Well, I thought I told you, but, and you're like, oh my God, and it's shocking. It's like, that stuff can creep up on you, mm-hmm. and it can creep up mm-hmm. on you because it is that insidious rot. It can creep up on you and you don't even know that it's coming, and then you are speaking to your partner in ways that you would never talk to another human being. And we put these little silly rules in place so that when we need to check in with each other, we don't have to tell the other person off, because sometimes when you want to tell someone off, they're not in the right position to receive that telling off. In fact, I'd say more often than not, when you want to tell someone off, it's the wrong time to do it. You can just chuck out rule number 5, don't throw me under the bus. And it just reminds us that we're coming from the same page. We're both fighting for the same thing. And that's to, you know, mm-hmm. be lovers, but also be friends, mm-hmm. to have respect always. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that we always keep singing.
Mm. Yeah. You've told me about is it the temperature test that you've done before?
Yeah, the temperature test.
In terms of tools and things that you use.
So tools, I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but I've found that the essence of any relationship is clearly communication. The temperature test is something which I learnt from a relationship and conflict counsellor, who basically taught it to me as a way of kind of sorting out like where you are with your partner. The brilliant thing about it is it's a tool that you use not because things are in an awful state, but just because you need to do something like this maybe once every 2 weeks or maybe once a month that just sorts you out and gets you on the same page as your partner. It's 5 steps, really simple. The first step of it is appreciations. Back and forth, you tell each other 5 things that you appreciate about the other person. And what that does is just set the tone. To make it really nice, and we're coming from the same place. Mm-hmm.
And you see each other.
You see each other, and also you're seen, and it's so lovely. Mm-hmm. When someone says something to you, like, you know, when you stacked and restacked unstacked and restacked the dishwasher yesterday, which I know you hate doing, I really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, it's not, again, not sexy domestic work. Anyway, so you do that. And then the next thing you do is 3 short-term dreams and 3 long-term dreams, because these things are changing all of the time. Yeah. And sometimes you don't know what's in your partner's vision. And sometimes I think couples can go like a whole year without checking in. Mm. And then they're like baffled that they're not on the same page.
Yeah. Or you hear your partner talk in a sort of group setting and share things that you didn't even know they were thinking at the time.
Yeah.
About their future and dreams that they've had.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so important that, because otherwise... Because I find that the sort of group setting scenario, there'll be sort of questions that are asked like over the dinner table. And then you start to hear things from your partner that you haven't heard yourself just because you haven't asked the questions that are being asked around the table.
And then you feel like a right old numpty, don't you? You're like, you're moving to San Francisco and writing a memoir? What? But also the thing is that what a lot of times what couples can tend to do is talk about their combined dreams. And that's lovely. Oh, we're dreaming of having children, or we would like to do this. And this is actually an opportunity to tell your partner what your dreams are. And that's actually quite, you know, there's something quite powerful in that as well.
Yeah.
Then the next thing is, this is the news. You tell your partner any bits of news you haven't told them from, you know, maybe the last time you did this. And as I said, that can be quite revealing as well. Because, you know, a lot of times we don't know. And then we hear again at a dinner table that, you know, X and Y and Z happened and you had no idea.
Yeah.
Then the next two ones are more strategic and helpful. So there's one which is called mysteries, where you are allowed to use this time to bring up any mysteries. Say, for example, a text message might come through on your partner's phone from a girl's name that you don't know. Mm-hmm. and you see it pop up and it starts niggling you. Mm. At the time, if you go, who's texting you? Who's texting you? It doesn't exactly put you in a good light, and it puts your partner completely on the defensive. It's basically taking the mysteries out of the potentially combustible scenario in which they happened. Yeah. So when you see that text message come on, instead of going really paranoid, you can say to yourself, ah, that's made me feel a little weird. I can bring this up in the mystery section. Yes. And when it's not explosive, and when it's not full of the tension that you felt in that moment.
Yes.
So you can be like...
You've got an outlet for that. Yeah. And an opportunity to discuss it in a safe environment.
In a safe environment, because it's allowed. Mm. Mysteries. So I'll be honest with you, the other day I saw a message come up on your phone, and it was from a girl I didn't recognise, and I'm sure she's just someone at work. But because it made me feel a little bit weird, I thought I'd ask you about it. Mm. And then he'll go, I'm really sorry that made you feel weird. You know, she's the girl that does catering for blah or whatever. Mm. Hopefully he doesn't turn around and say, yes, that's my mistress. I'm so glad you brought it up in the mystery section.
The mistress?
Yeah, the mistress. In this safe space. I could barely get that out, couldn't I? And then you have the final one, which is requests for change, which is also really useful, because you can just, it could be just simple stuff. Again, taken out of that moment, for example, you might be really irritated that your partner leaves the lid off of the toothpaste every single bloody day. And if you say it every single day in that morning moment, all you're going to get potentially is a defensive person going, who gives a shit? It's toothpaste. Whereas if you use it in that appropriate moment,
yeah,
this is my complaints with a request for a change. I know that it's only a little thing, and it's probably more down to my OCD than it is anything else. Do you mind putting the toothpaste tube back on just because it bothers me more than it should? And it's like, yeah. Oh. Do you know what? Because I heard it in that setting,
yes.
Rather than me feeling like, because if I feel like you're telling me off, guess what I'm going to do? Am I going to be an obedient child and follow your instructions? Am I fuck? So, you know, it's just that the whole thing about the temperature test is, A, it's just a communication tool, and B, it's taking you out of moments that could turn into something explosive when there's no need to for them to, and putting it into a position where everyone's actually listening.
Exactly, listening. It's an opportunity to be seen and to be heard and recognised.
Yeah.
And I think as well, like having a sort of ritual around it gives both of you an opportunity to get ready for that scenario. So it's like the signposting around it. So it doesn't just come out of the blue when you're like rushing out the door. You don't want to hear about the toothpaste cap whatever else. It's knowing that this is the environment in which you're going to be heard and seen.
That safe environment to bring stuff up, and then you do it like, my advice, and I went to medical school for about 0 years, so obviously take this with a pinch of salt. My advice for the listeners, if you're going through a tough time with your partner, would be do the temperature test once a week. You know, like the more, if you're having a tough time, like get into it, you know, because it's just knowing that it's on the horizon can make you feel better about not having to constantly be that person telling your partner what they are and aren't doing, you know, to someone who's essentially probably not in the right space to listen to you. It's a deeply helpful tool,
and it's just something to experiment with, isn't it? It's a tool, as you say, for effective communication,
and it's just remembering that little techniques, like starting off with a couple of appreciations, sets the tone for an open communication line, and that's, you know, that'll make somebody listen to you about the toothpaste if you've told them they've got lovely hair first.
What I love about it as well is that it helps you to get to know your partner every time, because I'm sure that the more times you hear about things that they're thinking about, mysteries that they've observed that you hadn't even noticed, and just to have a deeper understanding of your partner.
And that's the thing, is like, if what we are on this planet for is connection, this makes you feel deeply connected. Even the bits that you might not have wanted to hear still make you feel connected, because it's done in a way that is about connection.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because it's having you both be vulnerable in a safe place.
All about the safe spaces.
Just going back to your, back to 2017, I think it was January 2017 when we were talking about your intentions for the year, having done your journal. And I remember you telling Selena and I about your intention of worthiness for the year. And as you say, it was a month later, wasn't it, that you and Paz has had that chat and decided to give it a go.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day.
So yeah, that's the other really embarrassing part of this story, is that clearly we met on Valentine's Day 10 years ago. And then exactly 10 years later, we got together on Valentine's Day by accident. and for two people that hate that commercialization of love, we now have
an anniversary
that's on the day of love. So there, I'm sure there's a lesson from the universe in that, but yeah, the intention setting thing, I think that, like, it was really important for me to have the humility to say that that was what I wanted, and to not make assumptions around, you know, I think there was a few things at play. First of all, what I was going for was not what I needed. And you guys were the ones that said to me, you know, you're going for the wrong type of person. I know it's really easy to say, but like when the wrong type of person is like dressed up as the right type of person, I thought that I was attracted to a certain type of person, and I was, but I knew that it wasn't what I needed. I associated relationships with pain, and that's another reason why I didn't put it in my hello goodbye, and I didn't set my intention around it. And I was like, I remember you saying to me, like, why haven't you written it down in your book until now? It's like, A, because it's embarrassing. B, you know, I think it's humiliating to have to conjure up somebody through visualizing them. C, it's also the fact that I didn't know what it was I was looking for. As well, I knew what it was I was going for, and I knew what I was ending up with, but I didn't know what it was that I wanted. And it was you girls that said to me, you need to actually be practical about this and write a list of all the things that you actually want in a man. And, like, you know, like, really think about it, because what I'm ending up with is not what I want, but I'm attracted to it regardless.
Yeah, I think very few people actually think consciously about what they want. I think it requires an element of vulnerability when you sort of say, and this is what clients actually, they tell me that this is such a vulnerable thing to admit to friends and loved ones that they really want to find love, that they really want to find a loving and secure relationship.
So when I was setting my intentions in 2017 and I realized that I needed to just actually put my money where my mouth was, get a bit of humility and write that I actually wanted to fall in love and to find my love. And I had a chat with you and Selena, and we had a conversation around, like, okay, well, first of all, you probably need to do a bit of clearing around it, because you said, what do you associate love with? And I said, pain. And it's like, well, if you're associating love with pain, then it's clear why you haven't been putting it in your intentions. Nobody wants that. And then you said, be a bit more strategic about what it is that you want out of a person, because what you are attracted to is not actually what you want, but you are still attracted to it. And then you were like, just do a bit of clearing around this area, so that if the right person comes up, you recognize him. He might have been there all along. This is what I wrote when you gave me this homework. What have I learned about love? I've learned that it's important to have boundaries from the start, that without these, you have no protection. I've learned that boundaries are different from walls, which when you put up, love can't shine through. I've learned not to confuse abuse or infatuation or obsession with love. I've learned that listening can be one of the most important acts of love that you can do. It's simple, unflashy, but it's also quite difficult. I've learned that it's important to stop and think, how do I feel, rather than how do I make this person love me? I've learned that it's important to express anger, but never direct it at another person. I have learned, no matter how much you love someone, if they don't fully love themselves, they can't really love you back. I've learned that love can help heal, but you can't use it to fix another person. I've learned that at the end of a relationship, the end of a relationship doesn't mean the end of loving that person. If you're lucky, it's just a different kind of love. I've learned that my parents only taught me a few of the languages of love, and the rest I have to actively learn and practice on myself to be able to give to others. I've learned that love isn't seeing yourself through someone else's eyes and feeling validated, but to have enough love for yourself that you don't need that validation. I've learned that I'm a better lover when I look after myself. I've learned that to come to love from a place of need and want will mean that that love will never satisfy. I've learned that age doesn't give an indication of maturity. Emotional intelligence is not defined by your date of birth. I've learned that I've spent many years seeking relationships where I appeared less than. I dimmed my lights because I felt the person I was with was afraid of me being everything that I am or everything I'm capable of being. I've learned that there are people that I can shine as bright as I am and it doesn't make them afraid. And then I've gone, what in my wildest dreams does my love look like? The first one's very practical. I wish it didn't start with this, but let's go for it. He would have enough money that I don't have to pay for him. He would be stable and kind. He would be able to make me laugh. He would be interested, curious, open-minded. He would care about the world around him. He would look after himself, take care of himself, and know when he needs space and time to adjust. He would be open and would be able to listen. He would have boundaries. He would be generous and he would be brave when it comes to love, and he wouldn't let anxiety kill it at every corner. He would have integrity. He would do stuff, acts of service, as they are so important to me. He would love to laugh, be playful, get the sillier sides of things. He would also know when to look after me. He would be supportive and caring. He would be passionate about life and passionate about me. He would find the things in me that make me unique, lovable. I'm different, I'm ambitious, I'm creative, I'm filthy-mouthed, outspoken, I'm smart, I'm foolish, I'm clumsy. I leave my keys at home every other day and I get myself into pickles all the time. He would love the fact that I suck at life admin and that I'm brave and courageous and that I'm trying to authentically be me, that I'm in a constant state of transition and I don't have it figured out, but I am learning. Anyway, that last little paragraph is probably not that important, but the point is I wrote this list and at the time I was actually kind of seeing somebody, but I, you know, kind of knew that it was not right. And the brilliant thing about this list was I read through it and I was like, oh yeah, he's this but he's not that, he's this but he's not that. And it's so much nicer when you've got something like this to kind of refer back to, because it's just your map, isn't it? Yeah. Instead of going, ooh, this guy's got nice hair and he's so sexy, you're like, well, actually, he doesn't have any integrity and he's definitely not passionate about me. So that's that done. Yeah. Especially when the things on your list come down to the things that are, like this is like my list of what's the word to use?
Like non-negotiables.
No, my non-negotiables.
Yeah.
If you're not a silly bugger that wants to laugh all the time, then this is a no-no. Yeah. You know, if you're someone that's not passionate about life and passionate about me, that's also a no-no. Because I think sometimes we can get really caught up on people and when they're actually not that into us. Mm. You know, just anyway, I did that work around it. I got this list together. I set my intention and I just had the humility to finally write it in my book, my hello goodbye, and be like, this is the year that I would like to fall in love. And I probably did that on I'm going to say around the 7th of January I did it, because I was on time like a good girl. And then Paz and I got together on the 14th of Feb. So
much of that is Paz. Like, yeah, passionate about life, passionate about you, and everything else that you've just read out is so him.
Yeah.
Have you read it back since? Yeah, I
read it back when we first started dating, because I was like, oh my God, yes. And then I was like, hang on, get the list. Pulled up this list and I was like, oh my God, he's everything on this. Yeah. Stable, kind, has integrity, passionate. I mean, how passionate about life is he?
Like the most passionate person I've probably ever met about so many things, you included. So I'm going to ask you a few questions that I always ask people on the Real Love Story interviews. So what do you think are the key ingredients of a happy and healthy relationship?
Key ingredients for me would be laughter, communication, bravery, and I want to say being playfulness. Let's say play.
And what relationship advice would you give to your younger self with the wisdom and knowledge that you have now?
Oh my God. What would I... don't do it.
Just that Nacho is about to speak for you, yeah, then, the dog.
I would love to be able to say, don't do it. Don't get into the next two relationships you're going to be in. I think the advice I would give myself would be the advice you gave me, but just 10 years earlier, have a think about what it is you're looking for and why, and maybe get into therapy now. Start learning to love yourself and really think about why you're attracted to, you know, dangerous relationships.
And what advice would you give to someone who could be listening to this on their own journey of finding love, whether they're dating or not, but wanting to find a really loving and fulfilling relationship? What advice would you give to them?
I would give the advice of be open to the unexpected when it comes to what you're looking for. It might not be the package that you've sold yourself your entire life. And think about taking your ego out of it a little bit. And also think about maybe taking some of the stereotypes that you have, not stereotypes, some of the types that you might have given yourself, because they are all learned behaviors from somewhere and they might not be serving you anymore. And I would really get to the nuts and bolts of things that actually matter, the value systems that that person has and what it is that's really going to help you sustain a long, wonderful relationship. And that's things like being on the same page. So I would say, open up, be brave, but also be strategic.
What I hear so strongly is your courage to open up to love, to look at some of the unconscious blocks that were stopping you from seeing your own lovability. And but I just like the courage for you to open up to love, open your heart to love, and to give and receive that love, and see and being witnessing it as your friend, to witness a friend who's so happy and in love, and you know, you're with a person who is just so kind, so loving. He adores you, he worships you, and you're in that loving relationship that you really deserve. And as a friend, I love seeing how happy you are.
Thank you so much. And I love you too. Yeah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes, and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.